Today is September 27th, 2017, and this is episode number 430 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO, and Brian hasn't been able to find his way out of jail yet. I mean, he's still on vacation, so I have Jeff Butts with me today. Jeff, how's it going?
It's going great, man. I love that bluesy sound of the intro music.
Oh, isn't that awesome?
That is fantastic.
The background on that is this show started years ago, like before, even before I was part of TMO, and it was the weekly roundup, and it was Ricky Spiro that did the show, and and he has a voice that's so good that you would pay money to listen to him read a phone book. And he's also a bass player. So he wrote the licks that we use, and we still use those same licks that he created nice. All those years ago.
Nice.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So every time I hear our intro and outro bumpers, it just gives me a nice warm fuzzy feeling because I remember doing all those shows with Ricky all those years ago.
That's awesome.
Good times.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but it's great that you're here because it's always fun to mix it up a little bit on this show.
Sure.
And you're always so knowledgeable and we have such a good time. So,
well, I don't know about that, but you know,
well, yeah, it's all relative.
Yeah. It's all relative. I'm good at this is a clean show, isn't it?
It's a clean show.
I'm good at bluffing my way through things.
Well, that means you're going to fit in beautifully. So, High Sierra, macOS High Sierra, that was released on Monday. And I've been running the beta on my MacBook Air for, well, since Developer Beta 1 came out.
Yep.
And I was comfortable enough with the way it was performing through the betas that on Monday, once I was done with everything that I needed to accomplish for the day, I put High Sierra on my main machine. That's what I'm running right now.
You're a coward.
Well,
I've been running High Sierra on my production machine since Developer Beta 1.
Well, just from my perspective, the line between a brave man and a fool is very fine.
All right. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. But I've talked to people that think I'm very brave for putting High Sierra on my production machine on day one.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'll retract my insult.
It's probably very appropriate anyhow.
And offer my apologies.
Oh, hugs all the way around.
There we go. Oh, I feel so much better now.
Oh man. Yeah. We could wrap up the show right now and
I don't think our listeners would like that. I think they want to get some news.
It's possible. So anyhow, yeah. High Sierra, I'm running it on my production machine, and it's running fine for me. I am, however, seeing some occasional weird issues with redraw, but I believe it's app-specific.
Huh.
So I don't think it's totally a system level thing. It's not like I'm having windows that suddenly turned into just giant blocks of red.
Right. Okay. You
know, which is something I had with Sierra.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm seeing the same level of occasional glitches that I saw with Sierra, which is every once in a while I have to relaunch Finder because three-finger drag and drop on my Magic Trackpad stops working. Occasionally I'll move an icon from one place to another on my desktop and it kind of freezes in place.
Mm-hmm.
And relaunching Finder fixes that. But I see, maybe I am a fool, because not only have I been running High Sierra on my production machine since day one, but my production machine is a Hackintosh.
I knew we'd get there eventually.
Yeah, That's me. I rush in where angels fear to tread.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's foolish of me, but then again, I have enough insomnia that if something does break, I can usually stay up all night and fix it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been working with computers long enough that I know how to fix it.
Right. Yep. So. And no, I totally get it. I rush in where angels fear to tread as well, although I do it on my sacrificial devices initially. But when we get closer to actual releases, I tend to eat my own dog food, so to speak, and run the betas on production machines.
Yeah. See, my sacrificial machines are so much slower than Valtour that I just can't help but use the Hackintosh as my primary.
You know, I'm curious to see if that changes with High Sierra.
I mean, it hasn't so far. Because I do still need to. I've got the High Sierra GM candidate on Gandalf, my mid 2010 Mac Mini. Mm-hmm. I still need to upgrade him to the official High Sierra release. I haven't gotten around to doing that yet.
Yeah.
And it's looking like it may be the weekend before I get to it.
Well, now you have something to look forward to.
Yeah.
But I started running High Sierra Developer Beta 1 very early on my 2011 MacBook Air.
And how'd that work out for you?
Very nicely.
Yeah, that's what I've been hearing.
Yeah, my performance on the computer has improved dramatically. And this is even when I was running early betas.
Yeah.
It's been very surprising. I did not expect to see this much of an improvement on that machine.
Right.
Yeah, I was thinking that I might be close to time to retire that computer.
Uh-huh.
And after putting High Sierra on it, I'm okay. Just keeping it in my my stable of machines.
You know what I just thought?
Hmm.
Since I'm on the GM candidate on Gandalf, I should still be able to go back to Sierra. I'm thinking I might go back to Sierra, run Geekbench, save my benchmark results, upgrade to High Sierra, and then run Geekbench again and see what changes.
Oh, I like that. I would love to see what the numbers are between the two.
Yeah, because I'm guessing nobody has actually done that, or nobody has gone public with it yet.
Yeah, I haven't seen anyone talking about those comparisons. So I'm looking forward to seeing what happens. I guess I know what you're doing this weekend.
Yeah, looks like it.
Yeah.
So much for recording episode 5 of Terminal Tinkering this weekend.
I laugh only because I totally get it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So with High Sierra as something you've been using regularly, and now we're at the official public release.
Yep.
Are there any things that you're seeing as problems just in general, not Hackintosh specific?
It's hard to say because I don't have a basis for comparison.
How about apps that may not be performing the way you expect?
Older apps are a problem. FileMaker Pro 11 crashes consistently.
Yeah, I believe you need to be on FileMaker 14 before you can run stably on High Sierra.
Yeah, so if you're still using that old of a version of FileMaker Pro, and I mean, quite frankly, I don't blame you, because it's a rather pricey investment.
And and as long as you don't need the features that come with newer versions of FileMaker, it's pretty robust.
It's been robust, and it's been, I mean, well, we've been using it internally in my business for 4 years, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. I totally get it. It's the problem that FileMaker has is that it's so good that even with the new features that come out, it's really hard for a lot of people to justify upgrading because they've already got everything they need in the program.
And, you know, I heard people and I've read reports of Microsoft Office having problems in High Sierra.
This doesn't surprise me because Microsoft has been pretty transparent about they were expecting people would have trouble.
I haven't had any problems.
Now, what version are you running?
2016.
Okay. Yeah, so the fact that 2016 is working fine for you, that doesn't surprise me too much. If you'd said 2011, I would have been really surprised. Because Microsoft, they came out early on and said, yeah, we're not even supporting this. Okay. So we don't expect it to work well in High Sierra, if at all. And that's just how it is.
Well, hadn't they said that there were problems with 2016 as well?
Yes, but it wasn't like across the board issues. It was specific problems.
Gotcha.
I know some people that have to use Entourage are having trouble.
Okay.
But yeah, for the most part, it sounds like you'll be able to still use Office 2016. You just need to make sure that you've updated to, I think it's like 15.53.
Okay. Yeah, I don't use it that much, which may be part of why I haven't seen many problems. I honestly, these days, I only use it when I'm dealing with clients that are on Windows.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Yeah, or if I'm having to do anything with a CSV file, a comma separated values file,
mm-hmm.
numbers is just ugly when it comes to CSV files. Anytime I'm trying to do a database import from a CSV file, if I open it in numbers, it totally bungles it.
Yeah, that's no good.
Yeah.
Yeah. As far as web browsers go,
Chrome works beautifully. Safari works wonderfully. I haven't tried Firefox.
Firefox works fine. I'd recommend that you make sure you're on the latest version of all of them.
Oh, I always am.
And if you're running the latest versions of Chrome and the latest versions of Firefox, so I'd say anything that was released in like the last 3 or 4 weeks, you shouldn't see any issues at all. But older versions, maybe not. It totally depends on your specific setup.
Right.
1Password is running fine for me.
Yep. Same here.
And Text Expander right now, because I always jump it back and forth between versions when I'm testing things.
Yeah. Which one are you on now?
Right now I'm on 5 instead of 6.
Okay.
So I'm on the perpetual license version as opposed to the subscription license version right now. And that's working just fine. And 6 is working fine as well.
6 is working fine for me. Text Wrangler works fine.
BB Edit is fine. And I've heard that there's an update that will be coming out soon. Well, BB Edit's always getting nice updates. So whatever little issues that may be happening for some people in BB Edit, those will be addressed soon.
Oh, one app that is a total bucket of fail for me under High Sierra. NoteBurner.
And I'm not using NoteBurner, so I haven't encountered any problems there.
Yeah. NoteBurner on High Sierra with iTunes 12.7 does not work, at least for me. And on their webpage, they say that they're supporting Sierra and 12.7. Nothing about High Sierra.
Well, that's probably pretty telling right there.
Yeah.
One place that I was very surprised I had a problem was ScreenFlow, which is the screen capture video application.
Yeah. What problems were you having and what version?
So on version 6.2 something, I was having trouble. It might've been 6.21.
Okay.
And on version 7.0, same problem. I'd record say like a 30-second video. And when I was done recording, the video was actually over 19 hours long.
Oh, I ran into that too with I can't remember if I tried 7.0 after High Sierra went public, but I know that 7.1 fixed it for me. Did it fix it for you?
7.1 adds High Sierra compatibility. If you're still on version 6, 6.2.3 adds High Sierra compatibility.
Okay.
Which I thought was a really nice move. Instead of saying, look, we added High Sierra support to version 7, and if you need it, then you're just going to have to upgrade. No, they went and did a High Sierra patch for version 6 as well.
That's awesome. I mean, they've got plenty of reasons in 7.1 for people to upgrade, though.
Yeah.
My favorite is being able to animate text as much as you can now.
Yeah. It's a really handy tool. And it's something that I rely on regularly. So having High Sierra support is great.
Bonus.
Yes.
Cool.
Yeah. All right. So the other apps that I've been using, for the most part, I've been having really good luck. I am still, get this, for as much as I use Photoshop, I'm still on Photoshop CS6. And that's because Photoshop CS6 does everything that I need. So I wouldn't be getting any value in a Creative Cloud subscription.
I'm going to CC. Okay. Yeah,
I have no problem with Creative Cloud. It's just, you know, when I look at what I'm getting, I'm not getting more for what I need.
Gotcha.
So I'm still in CS6 and it's working fine in High Sierra, except when I go to save a file, I get this lag, like several seconds.
Huh.
Where at first I think, ah, crap, Photoshop just froze. But no, it's just there's something about the way Photoshop goes to save its files that really drags the application down
right at first. Okay. You know what? Reflector 2 does that to me, but it's after I've saved a couple recordings. It starts to slow down. Now, if I stop mirroring and then start it back up, it goes back to, it'll save a 30-second iOS recording in like 2 seconds.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's something about the continued use of Reflector. It starts to lag.
Hmm.
So that's interesting. And I don't think that's just High Sierra, because I saw something similar when I was on Sierra.
Yeah. The issues that I've had with Photoshop, this is High Sierra specific.
Okay.
As far as Creative Cloud apps go, I'd recommend that unless you have a very compelling reason to go to High Sierra, if you rely on Photoshop, Illustrator, and Design day in and day out, don't make the move to High Sierra yet.
Really?
Yeah, I think that there are enough issues that you may start having showstopper problems. Like in InDesign, there's all kinds of problems with cursors. And with Illustrator, Adobe has said, hey, Illustrator was not designed to work on High Sierra. and I've even heard Adobe people go so far as to say, we don't think it runs.
Wow.
Now, since I'm not running Creative Cloud, I have not been able to test that personally, but Adobe is concerned enough about app compatibility in High Sierra that it makes me uncomfortable telling anyone that's relying on these applications for their job to go to High Sierra.
Well, that's another thing that I'll be digging into this weekend possibly, because I've got a book that I need to lay out for a client.
Oh, and well,
that's the only Adobe product that I still use on a semi-regular basis is InDesign, because I have yet to find anything that's comparable.
Yeah, I believe what you're looking for is coming. It's just still coming.
Well, there's another app that may do what I need to do, but I haven't dug into it yet. The folks at Affinity, the reason I don't use Photoshop anymore is because I have Affinity Photo.
And Affinity Photo is amazing. And it is amazing. Compatible.
Yeah. Huh. And they sent me a code for Affinity Photo. They also sent me a code for Affinity Designer, which is geared more towards graphics designers. But I'm pretty sure it does offer text frames and text styling. So I may be able to use that.
You know, we need to check with them because I thought they had a third app that was coming out that was supposed to be essentially an InDesign clone.
Oh, really?
You know, like Affinity Photo is essentially a Photoshop clone. It's and when I say that, I'm not saying it in the literal sense, like they just copied these apps.
No.
But,
no.
But you know, feature-wise,
it is very comparable to Photoshop. It's just as powerful as Photoshop, I think. And has almost as many features.
Yeah.
And Designer, I haven't dug into yet. And you know what? Designer might be that InDesign replacement.
It could be.
Because, I mean, a lot of people use InDesign for magazine work, for comic books. You know, it's not just for book layout. It's used heavily for graphics design. Oh, sure. And I'm pretty sure Adobe Designer is not a vector-based drawing tool.
Affinity Designer.
Affinity Designer. What did I say?
You said Adobe Designer. And it's funny, my brain immediately started going through my Adobe app catalog in my head, and I'm like...
Yeah, Affinity Designer, not Adobe. Adobe is evil.
So, all right. So if you're running Creative Cloud... Stay away from High Sierra for now, I think.
Okay, good times.
Yeah. So, you've been kind of following what's going on with Apple Watch apps recently. You've seen a trend, right?
Quite a bit, yeah. A big part of that is because one of my part-time gigs is writing for a site focused on Apple Watch called WatchAware. Mm-hmm. And what we're seeing is some people think that the landscape for the Apple Watch is failing, that apps are being yanked away from Apple Watch, that you're not able to get the functionality out of your watch that you once could. And if you focus only on the big developers like Amazon and now Twitter, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, Google pulled Maps from Apple Watch a while ago.
Google pulled Maps. Amazon pulled its app. And the latest update to Twitter pulls away the official Twitter client for Apple Watch.
Okay.
Personally, I think that's irrelevant. I think anybody who's seriously using Twitter is most likely using a third-party client like Twitterific. Mm-hmm. And Twitterific is still on Apple Watch. I think what we're seeing is a shift. The big developers are pulling away from Apple Watch because the more independent developers are gaining traction. And they're taking away from that business. So you're getting more apps on Apple Watch, but some of the bigger names are going away.
See, I'm wondering if part of that is because in the beginning, Apple was pushing really hard to get apps on Apple Watch. Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot of companies were creating an Apple Watch app just to do it. And not because they felt that there was any value in it for their users.
Right.
And, you know, that takes resources. So at some point, you're looking at what your app is doing and how your users are taking advantage of it or not. And if you find that people just aren't using an Apple Watch app that you're pouring money into, why would you keep making it?
Exactly. And I think that's what happened with Twitter. That's probably what happened with Amazon. Google Maps, probably the same thing. It needs to start happening with news apps because those are the most worthless Apple Watch apps most of the time that I ever see. All they give you is a headline and a picture, and you tap on it and it says, please open your iPhone to continue viewing this content.
Yeah, see, that to me, that's a worthless use of Apple Watch resources.
Yeah, I hate it. I hate it. And hate is a strong word. I don't throw it around easily. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I absolutely hate any app that tells me from my watch, please open your iPhone to continue viewing this content. If I wanted to use my iPhone, I would use my iPhone.
Yeah. Have you seen any apps where, you know, like you're supposed to have an image to go with it and it gives you the alert and says, you know, it gives you the button to tap for view and you do it and nothing happens?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It's like, did these people even bother to try out their own app?
Right. Did they test it on an actual watch, or did they just run it in a simulator and say, oh, it works fine in simulator?
All right, so now this has me thinking. Is this a platform problem? Meaning, are developers getting into Apple Watch apps and then deciding it's just not worth it for them? And if that's the case, does that bode poorly for Apple Watch?
I don't think so. I don't think that's really the case, for one thing. You know, I track new Apple Watch apps every week, and I'm seeing relatively the same number of apps released for the Apple Watch every week.
Okay.
So the population is growing. And I think as people get their hands on the Series 3 with LTE, I think it's going to grow even more.
You know, I'm running Series 3 on my wrist right now. Not LTE, though.
Okay, so you don't have the red crown.
So I don't have the... Yeah, I don't have the red crown.
Poor you.
Yeah, poor me. But at the same time, whatever. It's not how I use my Apple Watch. So what I'm seeing with this watch is that while I was totally fine with my Series 2... things seem faster and more fluid on Series 3. Mm-hmm. And I'm finding myself interacting with my watch more than I did. And I use my watch a lot. But I'm interacting with it more because it's more responsive to Siri. And then Siri actually speaks back.
Siri talks to you.
Right. So, yes. So that has me using my watch more, even though I'm not using it with Siri all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the fact that it's more functional. I'm thinking to go to my watch more than I did before.
Gotcha.
So if other people are feeling the same way, then I'd say that bodes well for Apple Watch apps because now people are going to want to do more on their watch.
Yeah.
And I think LTE is going to play a big role in that too.
I think so too. I mean, honestly, the majority of what I use my watch for is timekeeping. And that's not just checking what time it is, but I have apps that I use that allow me to keep track of the time I spend on particular projects.
So time tracking apps.
Time tracking apps, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and I use my watch for outdoor activities a lot. And I'm curious to see what sort of accuracy I get on this watch. I did an experiment, and it didn't start this way, but it became an experiment this summer where I was out on a hike with my girlfriend.
Yeah.
She had her Apple Watch, which was pretty new at the time. And the variation between our two for tracking our hike, it was crazy.
Okay.
Like hers was radically off and crazy wrong.
Really?
Yeah. And mine seemed fine. And, you know, it didn't match the distances on the map exactly, but it was close enough that I felt like I was getting accurate data. And we notice there's this consistency issue between collecting data. So I'm curious to see if that changes at all with Series 3 and how apps are going to reflect that.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be interesting to track. You know, I get a lot of use out of my watch, even though there's not a whole lot of apps I use on it. I read email on it from time to time. And no, not with mail, but with AirMail is just gorgeous on the Apple Watch.
Interesting. You know, I really want to love AirMail, and I really want to love Spark. Mm-hmm. But the problem that I have is that they don't support encryption, as far as I know. And
right.
I can't they add don't. My digital signature to my emails.
Right.
And without those options, every email app becomes a showstopper.
Yeah, if you're that into encrypted email, I can see that. I only use encrypted email when I absolutely need to.
It depends. There are some people that I'm interacting with where they prefer encrypted all the time. So that's fine. Whatever.
Yeah.
For personal email usage, I don't encrypt very often, but it's important to me that my digital signature is there.
Gotcha.
And so if I can't include that natively with an email, then I'm just not going to use the app.
Sure.
So you're having good luck with mail or reading email on your watch.
Yeah. And replying to email.
I guess I have something new to try.
Yeah. With AirMail, you can do quick replies using the text options that Apple introduced. It also integrates with Siri, so you can dictate emails.
That's pretty cool. I do dictate my text messages mm-hmm. a lot.
And that's the other use case. When I'm riding around somewhere and I'm not at my computer, I do most of my texting from my watch. When I'm at home, most of my texting happens from my Mac.
Sure. Totally makes sense. Yeah. And
try doing that, Windows users.
Yeah,
sorry.
That's kind of funny. Yeah. Hey, I'm going to take us totally off into left field.
Okay.
Because here's the logic train that got me where I am right now. We've been talking about Apple Watch. We've been talking about the things you can do with your mobile devices. Mm-hmm. And then you said, try and do that, Windows users. And then it totally sparked this memory. Did you know that Bill Gates uses an Android phone, not a Windows phone?
Yes, I did. He recently switched.
Yeah.
Didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was fairly recently, and I'm seeing people just go off about how they're thinking this is like some crazy huge thing.
Eh,
yeah, that's where I am. I'm meh. This is not a big deal. Microsoft isn't into phones, so
well,
I mean not in the
not
way,
seriously yeah, not in the way, way not as seriously as Android and Apple are. But to me, it's like Bill Gates isn't really Microsoft anymore to me. He's been disconnected from Microsoft for so long that I don't associate him with Microsoft anymore.
Yeah, well, and I think that in the grand scheme of things, he would rather be known for his philanthropic efforts as opposed to his technological offerings.
I think that's what he's transitioned to. Retirement has been good to him, and he's using it admirably. You know, most people with that kind of money, I think after they retired, they would just live life large.
Mm-hmm.
But Bill and Melinda are going out and trying to improve the world. And you can't do that with a Windows phone. You can't stay connected as well to the people that you're dealing with a Windows phone as you can with an Android phone or an iPhone.
Yeah, I agree. I think that the offerings on Windows Phone are too limited.
Mm-hmm.
And in that sense, he's pretty pragmatic.
Yeah.
And so he looked around. He was like, okay, Android has what I need. Therefore, that's what I will use. And he put his Microsoft apps on the phone because Satya Nadella gets the whole Netflix philosophy of be everywhere.
Yep.
So, yeah, so you can get all your Microsoft apps on Android or iOS.
Or iOS, yeah.
And then use the phone platform that works best for you. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't looked at a Windows phone in several years, but back before I went into freelance writing and journalism, my supervisor had a Windows phone, and I mm-hmm. hated having to help him with that. I absolutely hated it.
You know, I liked the idea of the grid thing with Metro because it was so new and fresh, but it felt like it was implemented in a sloppy way.
Yes.
And that part disappointed me because I looked at what they were doing and I thought, okay, this is cool. This is new. This is going to spark new innovation.
Oh, but they did it in a really lousy way.
Yeah. And so that was disappointing.
Yep.
All right. So if the news was Satya Nadella was not using a Windows device, that would be big news to me.
That would shock me. That would be big news. I would be all over it.
Yeah. But, yeah, the Bill Gates thing.
I'd have to fight Brian Chaffin for it, probably. and he would win because he's my boss.
Yeah, it's and my guess is because you're a compassionate kind of guy, that when you see the joy it would bring Brian to be able to express his Schadenfreude,
I'd let him have it. Yeah.
Let him have it.
I've got enough things to play with.
Yeah.
I'm surrounded by gadgets and old hardware and all kinds of fun stuff.
All right. So thank you for the reality check on the rabbit hole I just took us down because I've been looking at this news for at 24 hours at least now about Bill Gates, and I just couldn't get worked up about it at all. Like,
and that's why, because it's largely irrelevant.
Yeah.
If we were covering philanthropy news, then maybe it would be interesting.
Yeah, maybe. Except what phone you use, what bearing does that have on your philanthropic efforts?
Precisely.
Yeah.
That's why I said maybe.
Maybe. All right. So you mentioned terminal tinkering earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about the new show on Daily Observations.
We haven't talked about it here, have we?
We haven't talked about it here, so we need to let people know about it. But then there's also some stuff you're doing that I have questions about.
Okay.
So I'm going to play straight man for a minute. Jeff, terminal tinkering? What's that?
Oh, man. It's my baby. It is where I get to do all of my deep, dark, horrific, geeky stuff.
I was worried for a second where you were going with that, but okay, I'm with you again.
Yeah. Man, I have so much fun. I play around with older Macs. I play around with Arduino stuff. I'm going to start digging into Raspberry Pi. Hackintosh.
We're going to have to talk some about Raspberry Pi.
Oh, man. I do so much, and all of it boils down to this. If you like to tinker with electronics or the terminal tinkering is for you.
So, new podcast.
Yep.
Video podcast.
Video podcast. aiming to release the episodes every Thursday.
Okay.
Hosted on Mac Observer. We're in the iTunes store. Just search for Terminal Tinkering and you'll find me. It's a great time.
And each episode's about 20-ish minutes?
About 20 minutes long, yeah.
Okay. So a fun romp without having to make a serious time commitment each week.
Yep.
All right, that sounds great.
20-minute video podcast. That's the only thing that's irritating me right now is the fact that so few third-party podcast apps support video.
Yeah, that's kind of annoying. Apple's own podcast app does, correct?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, so there's that.
And I put everything on YouTube.
Okay, so there are multiple ways for people to watch the show.
Yep.
Okay, cool.
And if you really want to just listen to it, the feed on the pages does play an MP3 track that's audio only. I don't know why it does that, but it does. So you're not going to get much use out of it because you can't see what I'm doing. But I think I do a decent job of narrating things.
All right. Well, I'm sure someone's going to find a useful need for the audio only feed. So good thing it's there.
Yeah.
All right. So when you got into doing Terminal Tinkering, which, by the way, I think is just fantastic. I'm so glad you're doing this show.
I am too. It's so much fun.
Yeah. It validated to me what I call my Apple II feelings, because I remember when that was the thing, getting an Apple II computer and then hacking together your own boards and writing your own code and turning the computer into something that was really yours, not just this box that you plug in and turn on.
Man, that's before my time, but it sounds like you're talking about Arduino now.
And Raspberry Pi.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I have Raspberry Pi, and I've been using mine for various tasks. And then I have an Arduino Bean, which is just a lot of fun, even though I'm very frustrated because the documentation is crappy for that thing. And
Arduino documentation in general is crappy.
Yeah. So, all right. So, I'm betting there's some people out here that don't know. I'll start with what Raspberry Pi is.
Okay.
And then I'll let you explain what Arduino is. So Raspberry Pi, it's a computer that is about the size of a deck of cards.
Yep.
And so when you buy a Raspberry Pi, they're what, like $30, $35?
Yeah. Between 30 and 39.
And so you have this computer that comes to you as the bare board, and it has the USB ports on it. It has HDMI out. It has a headphone jack. It has Bluetooth. It has Wi-Fi. It has an Ethernet port. And I'm talking about Raspberry Pi 3 right now.
Right. The most current.
The most current one. And so then you just need like a mini USB phone charger.
Right.
And plug that into it. And that's enough to power this thing. And so then at that point you can do anything you want with it because it's essentially like a mini Linux type computer. So you can put Raspbian on it and then other operating system builds and that all goes onto a little SD card.
Ubuntu has a build specific for the Raspberry Pi.
Yeah, so you can do command line stuff. You can do you can work with a graphic interface. You can use it like any other computer.
Yep.
Except you can also build it into anything you want. And there's this massive community out there where people are creating all kinds of things. So they're turning Raspberry Pis into like home automation systems, or home music streaming systems, sort of like a home rolled Sonos.
Yeah.
People are making robots out of these things. Mine today is acting as a home bridge or home HomeKit bridge through the home bridge utility.
Okay.
So I have Wemo smart switches that I can control through Siri, and it's actually passing through my Raspberry Pi.
Nice.
So that's a Raspberry Pi. What's Arduino?
Arduino is just a microcontroller board. You program it using a flavor of C++, or it might just be plain C. I can't remember for sure. When you get an Arduino board, most of them, the most common ones, just have a USB port and a power port.
So with an Arduino, where a Raspberry Pi is like, would be akin to a standalone computer system, an Arduino would be like an embedded computer system.
Yeah, it's a programmable logic board. In addition to the USB and the power ports, it has digital sensor ports, analog sensor ports. You can buy shields for it that offer additional functionality, like a touchscreen TFT screen, mm-hmm. A Wi-Fi shield. I've got an Arduino board that has Bluetooth LE built in. And on episode 2 of Terminal Tinkering, I turned that Arduino board into a temperature sensor.
Oh,
that fine. Actually, I can actually talk to it through my iPhone. Since recording that initial one, I've actually upgraded the temperature sensor so that it now has a combination temperature and humidity sensor.
Oh, nice.
So I can open up an app on my phone and see what the inside temperature is in my room, as well as what the relative humidity is in my room, and compare that with what it's like outside.
Okay. And there's no reason why you couldn't put this in a weatherproof box and stick it outside, and then you
have
your outdoor weather station.
The only gotcha there would be I would probably need to upgrade it to use Wi-Fi, because BLE has very short range and it doesn't pass through walls.
And for the people that don't know what BLE means, what is that?
That's Bluetooth Low Energy.
All right. Am I correct in my memory that you're not restricted to like typing commands to program an Arduino, that you can use some of the graphic interface utilities and build Arduino controller apps that way?
Yeah.
Too?
Yeah. There's an integrated development environment, an IDE for it. That's Arduino.
Tickle. That's what I was thinking of.
Tickle. Yep. There's Tickle. There's a couple others. Tickle is only for the Arduino Bean. It's not for, okay. It won't work with my Arduino, board from SparkFun or my Arduino 101.
How about Swift Playgrounds?
I haven't tried it.
And I honestly, I don't know. I haven't bothered to look.
I don't know. I have not done anything with Swift Playgrounds yet. I've been so mired in, and I say mired in a good way because it's fun, but I've been so mired in building the temperature humidity sensor and doing stuff with Hackintosh and getting my PowerMac G5 running FreeBSD that I just haven't gotten around to Swift Playgrounds yet.
Well, I am doing a quick Google search to see, and I don't think I...
Yeah, why bother search. Preparing when we can just look it up?
I know, that's exactly how it works for me. So, there's Mindstorms, there's MeBot, Skoog, didn't know about that one, so I'm not sure. With my quick search,
Some of the cool stuff while we're looking for this, because I'm scanning through an Apple press release right now. Mm-hmm. One person actually took an Arduino board, the parts from an electric wheelchair and some other components and made a remote controlled lawnmower.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, that was pretty rocking.
That's very cool. So now your environmental sensor system.
Yes.
What are your plans for that? Or do you have plans for other Arduino projects that you're looking at?
The next thing that I'm going to do is I'm going to build, excuse me. I'm going to build an on-air light that I can put on my door and control it through Arduino.
Mm-hmm.
So that I can let my roommates know when I'm podcasting and not to knock on my door.
That's very cool. I like that.
I'm also thinking about, someone posted a while back about a Raspberry Pi build that can count how many network devices are on your Wi-Fi network.
And that's cool.
Don't see any reason why I couldn't do that with Arduino.
It seems like a reasonable thing that you should be able to do.
Yeah.
Okay. Now here's one that I'm interested in, but I don't have any reason to do it. And it's a Raspberry Pi thing. You can make an Amazon Alexa compatible device out of a Raspberry Pi. So, Alexa, stop. Anyhow, so you can take a Raspberry Pi and turn it into essentially like an Echo listening and response device.
Oh, cool.
And I would love to see that in action.
Yeah. Actually, that reminds me of the other project that I had in mind for Kelly Gaumont.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to design a mailbox sensor.
Oh, she's going to love you for that.
Yeah, and then I'll record the build process, probably for an episode of Terminal Tinkering, and send her everything she needs to know for how to put it together.
So now, the idea behind a mailbox sensor is that you're in your home, or maybe not, and you want to know when you have mail delivered.
Yeah.
Excuse me. So you have a sensor that tracks the mailbox activity, like the door opening.
Yep.
And then transmits that back somewhere.
Yep.
And I can see where this would be really handy for a lot of people, especially like if you're in if you have property where you just can't see the mailbox.
Right.
Pop this on and now get notifications right on your phone or wherever that your mailbox has been opened.
Yeah. And, you know, Kelly has a valid use case for it. I've got a valid use case for it. One of my roommates is 85, almost 86 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And if I don't get to the mail before he does, he will quite often walk out to the mailbox and bring in the mail, and I always fear that he's going to trip on the stairs or something's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want that to happen. So I'd like to know when it arrives so I can go out and get it before he feels that he needs to.
I like this plan.
Yeah.
And now I see another Arduino project for you where you're strapping an Arduino to him, maybe a bean, and then you have a Bluetooth sensor set up.
Oh.
So when he walks near the door, you get an alert.
No, you know what?
Hmm.
I can do a motion sensor on his chair and have it alert me every time he raises his chair up.
There you go.
I already know when he gets home because I've got a Skylink Adams garage door opener.
Mm-hmm.
That sends notifications to my phone whenever the garage door opens or closes.
I like this.
I do too. Man, that was so much fun setting up. And so I know when he gets home, because he goes out, you know, he's not an invalid by any stretch of the imagination.
Mm-hmm. But he's more fragile than he was.
Fragile. Yeah. He's more fragile than he cares to admit. I mean, the man's a surveyor, mm-hmm. and he still goes out with his walker or his cane and helps his son do surveying projects.
That's very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And then he comes home, and I know when he's home, so I can go out and make sure he gets in okay and everything's fine.
This is awesome. See, these are the kind of projects that I get excited about, because it's more than just, oh, I have technology and I'm going to do something because I can. But right. it's about, I have this technology and I'm figuring out how to use it to improve my life or someone else's life.
Yep. Exactly. You know, it comes in handy in so many ways. You know, right now I don't drive. So he drops me off somewhere. I know when he gets home,
mm-hmm.
because my watch pings and lets me know that the garage door is opened.
Yeah. See, this is great.
So I know he got home safely. Yeah. It's a great peace of mind.
I like this. I like it a lot. And see, these are all reasons why I was so excited when Terminal Tinkering came together.
Yeah. And, you know, I should talk about the garage door on Terminal Tinkering.
Yes, you should.
I really should. I'm already planning on writing a review of it for TMO.
Oh, great.
But it would absolutely be cool to mention on Terminal Tinkering.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to your episodes where you talk about the garage door opener, where you're doing more things with Arduino, and when you get into Raspberry Pi. We'll have to talk about Raspberry Pi.
Sure.
Yeah. And believe it or not, we're actually out of time.
Wow. That was quick.
I know. It just, time just kind of flies.
Yeah.
But it's always fun getting to talk with you.
Yeah. You too.
And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. Thanks for listening. And our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO. That's all for this week. And Jeff, thank you so much for making the time to join me today. And we'll see if we can get Brian bailed out of jail. I mean, back from vacation,
yeah.
So that he can be here next week.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here. And listeners, stay subscribed. We will see you online at the Mac Observer.